Welcome to the APA Podcast, where we help one another follow Jesus at home, in our city, and around the world.
We're starting one of two summer series today. This series is called Summer Playlist. And maybe you're like me, but our family, whenever we take a longer drive, we pass the phone around and people take turns adding a song to a playlist. And so it gets pretty eclectic because we all have very different tastes. We have playlists that include Brian Dirksen, Lainey Wilson, and The Weeknd, kind of all together, and it gets kind of all over the place, but it's fun, and we all get to share the music that we're into at the time. But music is powerful. Music is pervasive. Anthropologically, there's no culture that we are aware of in all human history or prehistory that existed without music. Anytime humans have gathered, they included music in that gathering, as is seen in Sunday church services. Physiologically, music engages the entire brain. It scans the brains when people are listening to music. The whole thing is lighting up. And it's one of the reasons why when you put words to music, it's easier to memorize them than if it's in basic prose. Like, how many of you still, as adults, will admit that when you're trying to locate a letter of the alphabet, you sing the song, right? H-I-J-K. Oh, it's after J. Okay. You do that together because we've memorized the alphabet by music. Scientifically, music seems to be fundamental to the universe itself. The leading theory in physics is that the universe is composed of tiny vibrating strings. Now, what do we call vibrating strings? Music. You can't hear that. It's not on. It's music. Guitars, even pianos, violins are stringed instruments that when the strings vibrate, they create music. And of course, biblically, the Bible is full of music. The creation account is highly poetic, leading some to speculate maybe God sang the universe into existence rather than just speaking it into existence. The first two chapters of the Gospel of Luke have five songs in them. It starts like a Disney movie. They're all just, you know, breaking into song constantly. Revelation 5 has three songs sung by every creature in the entire cosmos. And of course, most famously, where we're going to land for this series is the book of Psalms, which is an entire song book, like a catalog of the most famous songs in the nation of Israel, a hymn book, perhaps. And this is where we'll spend our time over the next 5 weeks, unpacking five different types of psalms, the summer playlist, you could say. And the psalms we've chosen represent different types of psalms, like five different styles of music you might listen to. And when we listen to music, sometimes you can just listen to whatever, but other times music that you choose is based on maybe your mood or the activity that you're participating in. Like the playlist at the gym is much different than the playlist at the spa. Right? At the gym, you want to get energized. You want something to pump you up. At the spa, you want calm. You want slow. You want relaxing because it's a different kind of activity. So Psalms actually provides all kinds of different type of songs that speak to different human emotions, different human experiences, different human states of mind, fear and despair, anger and frustrations, murderous rage even, but also joy and hope, faith and worship, awe and wonder. All of this are found in the Psalms. So over the next 5 weeks, we'll look at the ways in which these Psalms speak to the human experience. In this first week, we're looking at what's called a wisdom psalm. A wisdom psalm. You can open up to Psalm 1, the very first psalm. It happens to be one of my favorite psalms as it begins the whole collection. And one of the things that music can do, regardless of genre, is it can actually pass down wisdom. An artist will have a message they want to share about what it means to live the good life, what it means to be a person of goodness, and they'll pass that on through the medium of music. So an example from my wife's preferred music genre, she's a country girl. Maybe you know Tim McGraw's Live Like You Were Dying. You ready? Just kidding. I'm just going to read it. I went skydiving. I went Rocky Mountain climbing. I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu. And I loved deeper. I spoke sweeter. And I gave forgiveness I'd been denying. And he said, someday I hope you'll get the chance to live like you were dying. You got the country twang in there. And the wisdom that Tim is trying to offer is, why would you wait until the last moments of your life to really live? Why don't you do all the things that you know are right and good and true even now? So many Psalms offer wisdom to us, passing down knowledge from the writers to see how life can be sweeter, to see how we can live lives of blessing. And that's the language we'll see in Psalm 1. It's talking about what it means to be blessed, what the good life looks like. So let's read it. It's Psalm 1. It's 6 verses. I'm reading from the New International Version. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. Not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked leads to destruction. So let's start with that first word, blessed. Blessed. There's a couple of words in the Hebrew language that will get translated as blessed. One of them is the word barak, which means some sort of bestowal of a blessing. Like when God blessed Adam and Eve and said, be fruitful and multiply. Or he blessed Abraham and said, I'm going to turn you into a great nation. When you give something to someone, when you offer them something that benefits them, that is a blessing. It could be a word, or literally if someone offers to buy you lunch after church, they have blessed you. That's barak. But the word here is ashrei. And instead of it referring to the act of blessing, it describes the condition of being blessed. Specifically, the condition of someone who's living according to God's wisdom. And so it could read, happy is the one, fortunate is the one, flourishing is the one. He's living the good life. She's enjoying the flourishing condition of one who's living according to God's wisdom. And so there's an underlying principle, an underlying assumption in this psalm, that God has made the world in a certain way, and that God has made us in a certain way. And when we learn how God has made us and the way in which he designed us to live, the purposes he has for our lives, and when we learn how God has made the world and the way in which he expects us to live in this world, and we live according to that, we will put ourselves in the position to be blessed. God has designed us to live a certain way, and when we follow his design, we will experience his blessings. This principle extends all through life. Like if you want your car to run efficiently and last a long time, you're gonna change the oil regularly, bring it in for tune-ups, you're gonna not speed too much or take it off-road, and your car should last and run efficiently. If you want to have a healthy body, you're gonna eat healthy and sleep well, and you're gonna do all the things that will keep your body healthy. You're gonna see the doctor when you should. That will, generally speaking, help you live a healthy life. Now, we know that there are plenty of obvious exceptions to these generalities. These are just generalities. You can take great care of your car and someone can crash into it. Or you can get a lemon no matter how good a job you've done changing its oil. Or you can be the healthiest, you can have the healthiest habits in the world, but you can still get sick at no fault to your own. The books of Job and Ecclesiastes are places where you see the exceptions to these generalities explored and kind of parsed out. And yet there remains this wisdom principle, this general wisdom principle that living according to God's purposes, living according to his design, sets you up to experience the good life. You put yourself in a position so that you can live a life of blessing. Someone has once said that being a Christian doesn't necessarily make life better, but it does make you better at life. You get better at what life was meant to look like. You get better at fulfilling God's purposes as you trust in and follow Jesus. And so you position yourself to be blessed. And so as we go through the psalm, we see firstly, it starts with how not to be blessed. And it'll give us a description of what the blessed life looks like and a little bit of a clue of how to get there. So first of all, how not to be blessed. Notice the progression in the first verse. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers. Walk, stand, or sit. You know, I could go for a walk in Mill Lake Park. I could do the loop. I think it's 2.5 or 3 kilometers. I could walk and I can enjoy the scenery, but I'm just passing through. I'm just checking things out and then I'm leaving. But I could progress and then I could go and I could actually stand in Mill Lake. I could, you know, roll up my pants and take off my shoes and I could go stand with the geese, make myself a part of the scenery. Others who walk through might see me and wonder who the lake guy is, but here I am standing in the lake. Or I could take it one step further and I could sit in the lake. I could go right under the water. I could get right in there. I could become one with the fish, one with the lake. And, you know, obviously negative consequences to being under the water. But this is the progression of walk, stand, sit. There's, at one point, you're just walking, and then you pause, and then you really take up residence and position in a place. It's referring to the way that we progress into sin or into the unblessed life. It often starts by just passing through, taking in the scenery, just a brief visit, a brief look. Then we progress to lingering there. We stick around, and ultimately we reside there and become a part of it, entrenched in it, overwhelmed by it, drown in it, walking, standing, sitting. Sin becomes then the place where we live. It's not the place where we're designed to live any more than we're designed to live in a lake, but that's the progression toward the unblessed life. We were made for something different than that. And so notice the psalmist talks about the relational nature of this progression as well. Walking in step with the wicked, standing in the way of sinners, sitting in the company of mockers, that there's community that's drawing us in. There's this peer pressure. There's the pull of the crowd. There's the pull of culture. There's the pull of the surrounding people that we're a part of. Now, the Bible doesn't teach that we should never interact with people of other religions or non-Christians or quote-unquote sinners. There's lots of other talks we can have about what those relationships should look like. But what it's talking about here is not having a distinction between us and those who don't follow Jesus. Letting their influence be so powerful in our lives that we engage and we get transformed by their influence rather than the reverse. We start to align our lives with those who aren't aligned with God's wisdom. We start to join others in living against the grain of God's purposes and design in the world. So there is this peer pressure associated to this verse and this progression towards sin, but there's also personal accountability that you as an individual still need to make the choices to go against the flow of those who would draw you towards sin. Well, what's the other option? If this is how not to be blessed, to walk and stand and sit in sin, what do we do? Well, first, let's look at what does the blessed life actually look like? Verse 2 says, you know, blessed is the one who does not walk, stand, sit, but those who delight in the law of the Lord and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. One of the most common metaphors in the Bible for a human being, strangely, is that of a tree. We are compared to trees all the time. And trees are the most common biological thing in the Bible mentioned other than humans. They're all over the place in the Bible. The same word for tree will get translated tree or bush or vine, so it's much more common than you might think. Of course, it all starts with the trees in the Garden of Eden, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. One tree that gives life and one tree that brings death. After that, trees are everywhere, intentionally reminding us of this garden scene. Noah's ark is made with trees, and the whole ark is designed as a mini Eden full of fruit and animals. Many godly characters meet under a tree or experience God's presence under a tree. Moses met God at the burning bush or burning tree. Abraham found a ram under a tree that replaced his son as a sacrifice. Deborah, the wise judge of Israel, often met under a tree. And the images of new creation in the book of Revelation are dominated by the return of the tree of life. And so trees, scripturally, represent the blessed state.